You have broken just about every city ordinance that pertains to this line of work.
You can't say we haven't been a lot of laughs.
Meet two guys who not only pick up, they deliver too.
Uh-oh.
Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez deliver the laughs.
What is he doing?
I'm crashing!
Men at Work.
Starts Friday, August 24th at a theater near you.
Scott and Todd, special episode here on April 25th, 2024. It's another Wii Watchables for everybody. I know you enjoy them so much. We've done them in the past. And spoiler alert, you already know what movie it is because you just heard the trailer as the intro to this week's episode. Todd, this is one of those movies, much like the one we did a couple months ago, that we saw many, many times thanks to HBO. It was in heavy rotation in HBO. As we mentioned last week, this movie was...
Wait, I've not seen this movie many, many times. I've seen it like one other time.
Okay, well, I've seen it many times. This movie also 1990. And of course, this is the Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez vehicle known as Men at Work. It's funny, if you look this up on Wikipedia, I think it describes it as a comedy, a romance, and a thriller. And I'm like, I'm not sure it checks any of those boxes completely, but it has elements of all three, I suppose. But anyway,
I mean,
1990 flick,
romance. Like very low suspense thrillers, yes.
You never knew what was going to happen till the very end. Spoiler alert.
I think you had a pretty good idea.
You're pretty safe? Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a little background on this one. Again, 1990, was shot in 89, but came out in 90. Written by Emilio Estevez. Of course, Emilio Estevez, for those that don't know.
Directed by as well.
Directed and starring Emilio Estevez. Estevez and Charlie Sheen are brothers. We talked about this actually not that long ago for some reason. I remember that, but... but yeah, they're straight up brothers, right? Like it's not the same parents, half brothers. Okay. I think Martin Sheen is the,
I mean, they definitely have the same
common
dad,
element
but
there.
I think they have a
yeah, definitely have
moms.
The same dad. I think, Charlie,
they're like the same age,
right? Fair point. I think Charlie,
no, he's the older brother of Charlie Sheen, but I do think they're half brothers.
Okay.
Oh, wait,
so Charlie was.
Second.
Oh, jeez. All right, I'm going to eat my dinner while Todd looks this up.
He was born. He's the eldest child of Janet Sheen. His siblings are Ramon Estevez, Charlie Sheen, born Carlos Estevez, and Renee Estevez. But I feel like I looked up Charlie Sheen and his mom was somebody different.
Well. Sounds
oh,
like
yeah,
you're
he has
wrong.
A different mom, Janet Templeton. Charlie Sheen does.
Okay.
No, but we determined that that woman is the same person.
Hmm. Maybe that's what it is. So Charlie has no Estevez in his name. We don't think. We're not sure what's happening. In any event, they're brothers. They're half brothers. They're related. That's really all that matters. And yeah, Emilio wrote, directed, and starred in this flick. It said in some of the things that I read that he actually edited this film at night while shooting Young Guns 2 during the day. So hashtag
yes,
dedication.
I read that too.
Good for you.
He started writing it in like 85. Yeah, I mean, yeah, more on that. Feels like an '80s movie. I know it came out in '90, but it's an '80s.
No,
movie.
It's an '80s flick, 100%.
not that I would movie that comes out in 1990s feels radically different than one comes out in '89. But
just because the calendar has turned, and again, it was filmed in '89, so it's definitely an '80s movie. I was shocked at how much of this flick I remembered as I was watching. It sounds like you may not have had the same experience, but I definitely was.
I literally think I've seen it one other time. So
that's amazing to me.
I was like, have I seen this movie the whole all the way through before?
Because like it got to certain scenes. It got to certain scenes and I was like quoting what the characters, specifically Keith David, what his character was saying, because I think he had some of the best lines. But again, we'll get to that later as well. Leslie Hope, the female lead, if you will. I mean, the leads were Charlie and Emilio, certainly, but the female love interest in this movie, she was on 24. I never watched 24. Did you watch 24? The show? Hello? What are you doing?
I lost you. What did you say?
Oh. Leslie
you
Hope.
I couldn't hear you. Yeah.
Okay, Leslie Hope, the female love interest, was on the show 24, the Kiefer Sutherland show. I never watched 24. Did you watch 24?
I watched all of 24.
So it says that she was Laurie Bauer? I don't know. I know that Keith Sutherland's character was Jack Bauer. So was she prominent in that show? Terry. Was she prominent in 24?
She was only on the first two seasons, it looks like, which is, I think she like gets killed off. I think somebody else plays his wife in later seasons.
I mean, interesting.
She's fairly prominent in the first couple of seasons, like in the storyline, and then they're like, who cares about his wife? His daughter's see prominent later. For like Alicia Cuthbert.
The whole thing. Yeah.
Well, she's I would say she's in like the first four season, goes away for a little while, gets kidnapped or something, I don't remember, and then comes back as like an agent later in the show, I think.
Logical.
I mean, the show went on for 9 years.
Yeah, it was a long one. Good show. Yeah. Never saw it.
His daughter's in about half of them. I mean, actually, it is a really good show. Like, it gets stupid towards the later years because they're just like, they have to amp it up more. So there's just more explosions and more like crazy shit. It's sort of like ER Lost. Or that other hospital show, Grey's Anatomy, where like, oh. The ferry's always crashing into something or a helicopter explodes in the emergency room.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure all those
doctors are making out or fucking right. The
well, they're area. Fucking, yes, in the rest area. No, they're fucking in the supply
whatever,
room,
the
supply
the,
closet.
The room where they sleep when they're not working.
Yeah, yeah. Their break room. I got you.
Break room, yes.
Anyway, so
break me off a piece of that.
When you say rest area, I think of like on the interstate.
Yeah, I know. I was like, that's not the right term, but
yeah. So yeah. So Leslie Hope just didn't really have much else in her career. I'm not saying she peaked with Men at Work. Don't get me wrong. She was very young. She was in her mid 20s.
There's that category that we can.
I know. We'll get there. Anyway. And then again, as before we get into the categories, as for the Estevez bros, as I'm calling them, this was right in their pocket. Like for Charlie Sheen, this was within 12 months of Cadence, which is, I think, one of my favorite Charlie Sheen movies of all time. Hot Shots, which is a silly comedy, and Major League, which is also a silly comedy, were all within 1 year of this coming out on either side. And then for Emilio, you had Young Guns 2, Free Jack, and Mighty Ducks, the first of that long franchise, which made him a shitload of money, although I'm sure it wasn't good. Those were all within 12 or 15 months of this movie coming out.
Yeah,
so,
but I feel like Charlie Sheen had that second run with whatever that TV show that he had.
2 and a Half Men. Yeah, I'm not saying this was at the height of his power. I'm just saying he was in a bunch of very popular movies. No, from a movie perspective, he definitely made... Gotcha. A shit ton more money and was way more popular with 2 and a Half Men. You're not wrong about that at all. But this was like round one.
This
was
like his early peak time. And then he had like a little drug-induced lull, I think, for 10 years or so and then came back.
As we all do. Yeah. As we all do. So, anyway, all right. So, for those that don't know, the plot of Men at Work, I'm not reading this. I'm going from the top of my head because I just watched it for the second time last night and finished it this morning, actually. But
I just finished it about 15 minutes ago.
I figured you did. Two garbage men, friends.
That's
are,
their profession, not just...
That's their profession, yes. Are out doing their route, and they come across a deceased politician or a potential politician running for office, and in a giant 55-gallon drum, and they have to try to figure out... Oh, by the way,
doing a poor job.
All right, you do it then. I got to eat anyway. All right, you
so
do the recap.
Two garbage men who are friends who have dreams of owning a surf shop.
Not relevant, but true.
Whatever. They have bigger career aspirations than being garbage men. Anyway,
they're
over at Charlie's apartment one night drinking, and they see what Charlie Sheen thinks is a domestic violence incident. And if he sees somebody hitting his old lady, his solution is to shoot him in the ass with a BB gun. So he shoots him. I don't think that he actually was beating her. I think they misunderstood that part because those two were not in a relationship. Anyway, this politician and his...
He was just mad.
So the next day they're doing their garbage route and they find said politician in an oil drum, deceased. At first they think that he may have been responsible, but because of poor performance, their ride-along, Lewis, who is a Vietnam vet, quickly also becomes a CSI tech and says that he's been strangled and not very well or something like that, pretty sloppy. I'm like, is there like a clean strangulation that leaves no marks? Anyway.
Sure.
So the politician has been killed because he has evidence of illegal dumping of toxic chemicals.
Correct.
The boys decide to take said corpse in a little bit of a...
Don't do it. Don't say Weekend at Bernie's.
A little bit of a Weekend at Bernie's thing.
Oh, boy.
I mean, he has less wacky interactions as a dead man. But they take him along with some other hostages on hijinks to uncover the plot of the evil... what was his name?
Potterman the Third.
Maxwell Potterdam the Third.
Potterdam, yeah.
And hijinks ensue.
All right, that was a pretty good recap. Okay. Let's hop into it, Todd. You ready? You ready to get to the categories? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's do it.
I'm going to have you go first so I can take these last couple bites and I'll be done eating. We start, as we always do, with most rewatchable scene.
So, I think the obvious choice... I mean, this movie was made, again, in the 80s. There's a lot of, humor at the expense of homosexuality, I would say, that probably would fly less these days. But I think the most rewatchable mm-hmm. scene is when they're pulled over, Emilio in the car, in a truck with Lewis... the pizza guy and the corpse, and Lewis goes AWOL basically, and apparently he hates cops, and the thing he does to cops when they pull him over is take away their weapons
and their clothes
and he chains them up on a merry-go-round in a playground in a compromising position, and their underwear looks like they're gay lovers.
He does it more than once in this film.
Joke. I would say that's part of the, that scene is still pretty funny, but the sort of underlying humor maybe is a little out of date.
Sure.
The other scene that I thought was most rewatchable, well, it's not most rewatchable, but was actually kind of funny that I didn't remember, was when Charlie Sheen is practicing his phrenology on the female lead. They show him from behind. It looks like he's getting a BJ, but... He's really just massaging her head as they pan.
That's
around.
How they enter the scene, as you can hear her going, "Oh, oh." But yes, he's pronounced.
And they have
some
other innuendo in their language as well. I mean, super classy movie and classy humor for sure. I don't. Did you have any other candidates for most rewatchable?
Not really. Traffic Stop is by far my favorite scene. That's what I'm calling the first one you described. Just Keith David's lines are just hilarious. I mean, I'm not even going to try to quote them, but just the way he delivers them and the lines are actually very funny. And don't you think I know the difference between the sound of a revolver hitting the street and a flashlight?
Yeah.
Just, it's like he's in complete control of what's happening, and it is pretty hilarious because the pizza guy has a gag in his mouth. There's a dead
that
guy.
That part of the movie is interesting because he's the Charlie and Emilio's boss's brother and gets invited on the ride along, and then immediately is like, I'm going to get into some trouble with these two guys that I hate. Like
I'm going to tag along.
He punches Charlie Sheen earlier in their ride along, and Emilio's just telling him he's a fucking asshole. Like, and then they just jump into being like best buds. And he's like, he's their ride or die, like, muscle.
There's a lot that takes place in this movie that is just super accelerated. Like, it would take weeks to develop, but this whole movie takes place in like 36 hours. So, yes, you're not wrong about that. But anyway, the only other potential most rewatchable scene that I have, and it's more of a line than a scene, and it's more that this is what I think about when someone says this movie, is just when they say doing the nasty, which is cleaning out the back of the garbage truck, and they have to like sweep it with a mop. Again, it's not something you want to watch over and over again because they're literally doing disgusting work. They're like, oh, nasty, nasty, and they're just sweeping the back end of the garbage truck. But no, 100%, it's a traffic stop. There's no debate.
I mean, I think that is one of the more iconic scenes of the movie. I don't know if it's the most. I mean,
it is.
I guess it's the most rewatchable scene. It's a longer scene too, so there's more like
It's a few minutes.
Like that,
and it's quality.
The punchline is the cops being handcuffed around each other in Greco-Roman style wrestling pose. But
yes,
there's a lot of like lead in to it.
Everything before that is the good part. So okay, good stuff. Age the best and age the worst. We'll start with age the best.
I wasn't sure for what's age the best in this movie.
Oh, really? I have several. All right, I'll go first. Terrible plans to solve these life kerfuffles. What I mean by that is this was like a trope of these movies. All right, we found a dead body. Here's what we're going to do. Charlie, you go across the street.
The least likely thing.
And they do this constantly, including with like 5 minutes left in the movie when they get Potterdam? What did you say his last name was?
Maxwell Potterdam III.
Potterdam the Third's character to get out of the big truck, and then like she pops out of this thing and spray paints him. They throw a doll, and like how they set this up in literally no time at all is ridiculous.
So stupid.
Because, and then he ends up sliding down the thing.
First he catches the doll and he just sort of looks around.
He's like, oh!
Yeah, he's startled. Where'd that come from? He doesn't investigate any further. He just keeps walking. I mean, a doll doesn't just fall from the sky. I mean, I know he's in sort of a trash dump.
Yes. So yeah, he doesn't look that direction at all. He throws it to the side and keeps moving forward. Anyway, so that aged the best because you saw that many times in those movies. I think the Estevez brothers' mullets.
Wait, you think aged
the best?
Oh, yes. I bet that is one of the things that aged the worst.
Aged the worst? Okay, that's fair. Boy, do they have bad hair. Both of them like matching mullets in this movie.
And Charlie Sheen wears his in a mini ponytail for a while.
Yeah. That was weird. A very small ponytail. Jolt Cola to start your day in lieu of coffee. I thought that aged pretty well. Although Jolt Cola, to the best of my knowledge, is no longer a thing. But very early in the scene when they're drinking what looked to me to be a Dr. Pepper. But I researched. It turns out it was apparently a Jolt Cola product placement situation. And then easily the one that aged the best by far. Large pizza with pepperoni and extra cheese, $8 delivered.
Oh, yeah.
Can we bring that back, please? Get the fuck out of here. $8? I was like, you got to be shitting me. That's an amazing price. So that's my
I have this for another category, but I would say the pizza delivery guy's uniform also aged the best because it's fucking ridiculous.
I have a piece of that in a later category as well, but yes, it's pretty awesome.
I had things that aged the worst. Lewis's Vietnam flashback.
With the pizza guy turning into a Vietnam Viet Cong.
Yes. That's like, oof.
That was not good.
Not good. I mean, there's the whole sort of homosexuality is a joke sort of thing that also probably didn't age that well.
No.
Charlie Sheen in the beginning of the movie just like rear windows, the building across, checking out hot girls.
Peeping Toms. That's my number one. Peeping Toms.
Peeping Toms.
Come on, man. And he's just like going up and down. By the way, with his lights on, like a dumbass, like at least turn the lights off so they can't see in to your window to see what you're doing.
We need to give advice for how to be a peeping Tom. But
I don't think anyone does it anymore, but that definitely did not age well. That was my number one for age. God.
Oh, that's all I had.
Oh, okay. So I had peeping Toms. I had cassette tape mix-ups. I mean, cassette tapes in general obviously did not age well.
I did not remember that part of the movie, but I was like, this is obviously going to be like swapping.
Clearly, she's going to pick the wrong tape up. Yeah. And by the way, the music on that tape, was amazing dance music.
Banger.
It's a shame he didn't have the chance to have the campaign and play that as his walk-up music. Giant cell phones. One of the goons had the brick gray cell phone that he answered at one point in time during the flick. And then the last thing is on the beach towards the end of the movie, again, the goons, the one goon tases the other one.
Oh, yeah.
And the CGI for the taser was. No.
The taser
looked
like
a spotlight or something.
It looked like a flashlight.
Yeah, it really did.
With like a red lens. And then, yeah, the electricity going through it was.
Yeah.
What did he say? It's ridiculous. 50,000 volts or some ungodly amount of electricity.
I don't remember the line, but I was like, all right, this is ridiculous.
It's interesting that like tasers clearly were not a popular thing, or they weren't as widely used because it came off as like no one's ever heard of this before.
Right.
It's like a futuristic.
Brand new technology in 1990, apparently. I suppose so. Okay. Casting what ifs. What'd you have for this?
So I from some of my research, Judd Nelson was a possibility as a replacement for Charlie Sheen or an alternate to Charlie Sheen. And then this isn't really casting, but John Hughes was going to be a producer and maybe a director.
That one surprised me. I saw that too.
He's like, oh, Charlie Sheen or Emilio can do everything. He's great. He didn't need me. And I'm like, this doesn't really feel like a Johnny, like it's not that level of 80s movie.
It's not, but I think because technically Emilio Estevez was part of the Brat Pack, I think that's why John Hughes was even related to the project at all or potentially interested. Because
yeah,
this is not a John Hughes
movie. I read
was
very positive about the
script
and about the movie and Estevez.
And Emilio himself. I agree. But I think that's the only reason he even got a copy of this at any point. Because there's no way John Hughes, like, this would have been a totally different movie. The score would have been different. More on the score in a minute. Everything about this would have felt different. I don't know if it would have been better or worse, but this wouldn't have made sense in the canon of John Hughes. And plus, based on when Home Alone came out, I assume John Hughes was probably busy making Home Alone. So thank God he didn't make Men at Work and instead made Home Alone, which turned out to be a classic. That changed the trajectory of many lives, as we all know. So, my only other casting what if, and I guess it falls in this category because I don't know where it would be. Why was there so much Rastafarian culture that was part of this
the beach,
movie?
Man, I don't know. Well, it's just that one guy, just the one other.
It's the one
rival.
Guy, but then
I have
Keith
one
David.
Of things as one of the quotes.
Yeah, I do too. But then Keith David. You can't really tell in this movie, but I think he has some Caribbean heritage in him. And there was there was several times. Oh, by the way.
He played the bongos in one scene when they were over at the apartment, I think.
There you go. He's playing the bongos. The top soundtrack is a terrible, I'm sorry, the top track on the soundtrack is a terrible UB40 song. There's just like a lot, it's just a theme that kind of is pervasive throughout, like subtly. But I'm like, I don't get why that's part of this. It doesn't make any sense. And don't say because they're at the beach. They're not in fucking Jamaica. They're in
Redondo Beach, sort of Southern California. California beach culture. Like
maybe so. I don't know.
Wearing those because the guy had like the
he had the
sort of dread hat, the doofus '90s like alternative hat.
And he had the giant Africa medallion with the colors that your New York Yankees had back in New York Yankees had back in the 90s.
The red, yellow, and green.
Yeah, the red, yellow, and green. So anyway, that's all I had for casting What's If. All right. If you have anything but what I have for the best, quote unquote, that guy, I'm going to be sorely disappointed. Okay, what do you have for best that guy?
Well, I had one, but then I changed it to the pizza guy.
What? Dean Cameron? Come on.
Yeah.
All right, full disclosure. Have? I have John Getz, obviously.
Oh, Gus?
Yes. Of fame from the other movie, the last
his
movie.
His role, he's not just, like, to me, the best that guy is, like, a smaller part
in
the movie.
All right, fine.
He has a pretty major part in this movie.
It's still pretty small.
B-level cast, I would say.
Per line. But yes, Dean Cameron has, like, six words in this whole movie. True story about Dean Cameron. He was the king in the mid-90s of, like, early to mid-90s of those late-night HBO flicks that
he
just
was in
watched
a lot of 80s
movies.
He was in like that summer school and like a bunch of
that's
why I was like, oh, that guy. Like, I didn't know what his name was, but I recognized his eyebrows.
Oh, I knew him right away.
Face.
He is famously in a movie called Miracle Beach, which if I look it up right now and see that it's online, I will watch it tonight. It was one of the greatest movies of that type back in the day, and he was kind of the male lead for that flick, but.
Oh,
all right, that's fine. I just had to get John Getz in there. I've forgotten he played the villain. And I was like, holy shit.
He has the same mannerisms as Gus from Dumb and Dumber. It's the same character. At the end of the movie, he's
more
running down
in his hair.
And getting assaulted. He's making the same sounds that he makes.
Yes,
in
100%.
That's not him acting. That's just his inner being coming out.
And when he slid down the slide shoot, into the puddle of waste and he stood up, it reminded me of him saying Sue Ellen. What, like when Sue Ellen sprayed him with the water, it was the exact same thing, except he was more drenched. So all right, fine, we'll give it to Dean Cameron. I had no other place to put John Getz, so I had to make sure we got a good John Getz conversation. Okay, the next one, there were no pets that I recall.
Best performance by a pet. It's not really a pet, but when the dog pees on the two cops that are tied
at the very, very end. You're right. I forgot about that. I think I'd already finished my write-up. Okay, yeah, that's literally in the last 10 seconds of the movie, a dog pisses on the cops who are tied up in the playground. Good point. Okay, thank you for calling me out on that.
Sure, no problem. I don't know what the dog's name was, but...
It didn't have a name. Unlisted.
It was someone's pet, I assume, not just...
Well, yeah.
Very well groomed for just a random street dog.
Yes, it was a large dog.
I know it's a movie dog.
Of course. Okay. Overacting award. This should be fairly easy, I would hope.
So I gave it to the bad guy, the henchman that got tasered. He had a lot of, like, New York energy. It was, like, not a good actor. I mean, both of those guys were a little extra, but
I think we have to have co-MVPs here. I gave it to the two goons. They were both so over the top, accents and everything.
Yeah.
Like everything they did.
I think one was from New York and one was from Chicago, or one was definitely Italian and the other one wasn't.
Yes, 100%.
I think
they reference that
in their lines.
They do. Although I'll skip ahead just real quickly because I have a lot under best quotes. For me, they had one of the best quotes, which was, and it was the New York guy. He's like, I think he wants us to kill some more people. Okay. He's like eating a pastrami sandwich or something. And the word had come down from Potterdam. And he was like, I guess we got to kill some
Potterdam
more people.
Maxwell Potterdam III.
Yeah. So that was, the overacting was out of control by those two guys. Every scene. I mean, it was entertaining. They were playing a character.
Yeah, yeah.
They played it well.
Comic relief slash.
Yeah, they did what they were supposed to.
Thriller, there's some of the tension, but I think calling this a thriller is a pretty big stretch.
I could not believe it when I looked it up. I was like, thriller? No, this is at no point was I thrilled, like, you know, just so amazed at what was happening on the screen in front of me. Okay. Next up, Dion Waiters Award. Can you explain what the Dion Waiters Award is for those that don't follow me?
So it's a heat check. I think of it as somebody who comes in, has a pretty small part, but like really kills it. I had for this award the guy who plays the lead cop.
Mike?
Of the two bicycle cops, yeah. Is he from Pee-wee's Big Adventure? He's not the...
No.
He kind of looks like that guy.
I see what you're thinking, but no. But he's been in a bunch of stuff. He's definitely he's one of those 80s actors.
He's kind of a dick, and just like, he plays that part really well. Like, you do hate
hey,
him.
Hey, Carl! Like
this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, you really do.
What were your thoughts for the Dion Waiters Award?
I said no one qualified. But I like your answer. I couldn't think of someone that was a small enough part.
Yeah, he's a pretty small part.
But you're right. Every time he came in, including in what we both agreed was the best scene in the movie, you know, he delivers. He cooks. You put him in the kitchen and he cooks. Let's find what his name was just to give him. John Putch. P-U-T-C-H. And his picture on IMDb looks nothing like what he looked like. I mean, granted, this was
almost 35 years ago. Yeah, a lot of these people do not look... Yeah. Yeah, it kind of looks like him, John Putch.
No, it doesn't. But it wasn't.
He's 62 years old now.
Yeah, I mean, he's an older fella. Was this... Why don't I see him in the... His IMDb doesn't show this movie. That's interesting. Or am I on... Oh, director. A lot of directing. Oh, my goodness. That was director I was doing that whole time. Okay. Wow. So he's one of those guys, like we said.
Yeah, I don't that even guy. See his actor page.
Yeah, I have to click on a separate thing here. Okay, acting. Let's see what else he did of note.
70 movies.
Yeah, I'm looking back. or TV shows.
70 credits.
Yeah, exactly.
He was in All in the Family in the 70s.
He was an episode of Seinfeld back in 91. That's interesting. Men at Work, as we know.
21 Jump Street, one episode.
Newhart, couple episodes. Yeah, he's just been around.
He's in Cop Rock. Working actor. What? He played
three episodes
Roy
of Family Ties.
On Seinfeld in The Stranded. I don't remember what episode that is.
I think that was early.
It says
season three, episode 10. Yeah. Relatively
oh,
early.
maybe that's when they went to the mall and he's like the guy they were buying the TV for or something.
It's possible. I mean, this is only a year or two after the Men at Work was filmed, so he would have looked similar. Yeah, he was in Clear and Present Danger. Whatever.
Clear
anyway, he's a working
danger.
Actor. Yeah, I don't know why I couldn't say that. doesn't matter. So, yeah, no, Mike, the cop, definitely came in with some solid lines. Just playing the asshole cop that everyone loves to hate. Okay, recasting couch. I have some good ones here, but I'll let you go first.
So I had maybe Kevin Spacey for Maxwell Potterdam III bring a little more edge to the evil villain. I mean, Kevin Spacey's
a little
Spacey's
more theater
now, but
yeah.
He wouldn't have been at this time. This is
no
not too far off of like this would have been very early in his career, but
yeah, definitely a few years before he hit it big.
And then because Emilio and Charlie Sheen are both sort of part of the Brat Pack, I said Kiefer Sutherland and Kevin Bacon as the two leads could have been an interesting like recasting of these two. If you think of like the Lost Boys era Kiefer Sutherland, he had the same mullet, so we could
have. He did have the same hair. Kevin Bacon kind of still has the same hair from what I've seen in him recently. I mean, I guess that could have worked. I don't think of either of them as kind of comedic actors, and you definitely
I know
need
that's
some element.
That's I mean, I don't think of Emilio Estevez particularly as a comedic actor that much. Charlie Sheen definitely, but
I do. I mean, even Young Guns too. Like it was a sarcastic. Comedy
yeah,
laced
but
character.
That feels like a much more dramatic role than.
I mean, it is. Anyway. But yeah.
I mean, yeah. I was just trying to. I looked through some of the other Rat Pack people or Brat Pack people. Yeah. Like, I feel like Spader is too Spader. He's such
He's
a distinct personality.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Yeah. That wouldn't work.
But you could, like, John Cusack, I feel like, could be one of them.
Cusack and Anthony Michael Hall?
Nicolas Cage, that would be pretty good, too. Two fuck-ups.
I was about to do my Nick Cage impression. Am I going to? No, I don't think that would work. Okay. I had, for the Keith David character, Samuel L. Jackson. In 90, before Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Just kind of that loud, angry black
he's
man.
He's so good that, like, yeah. I mean, we'll get to him later, but Keith David is so good in this movie.
I wouldn't want to recast him, but we're just playing the definitely what could have category, been. Obviously. You mentioned Dean Cameron as the pizza guy. How about 1990 Leonardo DiCaprio as the pizza guy? I mean, you can literally throw anybody in there because the pizza guy has like three lines. It's at most. He may have even less than that. And then I thought you were going to steal my thunder
Pains
here.
Era young DiCaprio.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. Just got his license 6 months ago. He's out delivering pies to make some money. The most obvious one to me, Andrew McCarthy and Jonathan Silverman as Carl and Jane. I mean, like, it's this movie has so many parallels, both theme, bad music, Jamaican music.
I don't know if you could buy, what's the other guy's name? Not Andrew
Jonathan
McCarthy.
Silverman.
Yeah, Silverman is the one of the guys that wants to open a surf shop. He feels a little too like New York.
Don't think of him as the character from Weekend at Bernie's, where he's a fucking wannabe hedge fund guy. I mean, both of them are. Andrew McCarthy is definitely zany and loony.
McCarthy
enough.
Could definitely do it, but the
and Silverman is too.
I don't know. He's a little harder. So,
but think about it. Think about this though. All right.
As a trash man, a garbage collector.
Well, can you imagine Charlie? Well, Emilio Estevez, I guess I could, but can you imagine Charlie Sheen being a trash man? Although his little ponytail, I could. But anyway, think about it.
He had a little
rat tail.
Scuzz vibe.
It was
to
terrible.
Him.
But in the scene,
sorry. they're working all day, and he's wearing like a cable knit sweater in the evening. So I'm like,
I know
a little.
He's very posh in the evening.
They're working. Yes. They're picking up trash halfway through their shift. They are wearing wetsuits under their coveralls
the surfing
and just
scene
go surfing
was
for
really
a little
dumb.
While.
That was
and
really
every day
stupid.
They're dining a la prima,
hamburger
like, eating outside and drinking beers.
Drinking beer, yeah, whatever. But no, if you think about the scene in the middle of this movie when Charlie Sheen goes across to the Leslie Hope character to try to get some information, and you mentioned the phrenology and everything. I could see Jonathan Silverman doing that same
that's
thing.
Fair.
Not Andrew McCarthy, but I could see Silverman doing that and pulling it off. So a lot of parallels, and it's the kind of buddy setup. And again, right in that wheelhouse of the time frame. I think Weekend at Bernie's was 88. I meant to look that up and I forgot to, but that feels right to me. So whatever. So again,
definitely same era.
If you had to replace these two guys, I think that's who you could have replaced.
Oh, yeah, 89.
Okay. All right, so we move on. Half-assed internet research. I'm sure you have some of these. Cause
I mean, we covered some of this stuff about Emilio editing it while he filmed Young Guns 2. It says he wrote 15 different drafts of this.
By the way, the original screenplay was entitled Clear Intent. It was written in 1985. That was his first draft. Was it going to be a totally different movie? Clear Intent?
I don't know.
I mean, I know what that means, but
title that was 95 Pop or something?
Yeah, it was. I forgot that one. I didn't write that one down. I just wrote down the Clear Intent because it blew my mind. Like, my mind literally exploded when I read that.
My favorite thing was from that Wikipedia article. Sorry, before I get there. Stuart Copeland did the soundtrack for this movie?
Yes.
What the fuck?
I could. I have that somewhere later on, but yeah. And if you look at the soundtrack listing, there's like 12 songs. Yeah, he's three of them. Why he was involved, I have no idea.
I mean, I think he probably has a little interest in like dub. So maybe they're like, we really like Jamaican stuff. Can you do the music for this movie?
Maybe.
So this quote from Estevez, for me to be able to do a movie where saving the environment is the underlying theme is the greatest contribution I can make, I think. More people are going to see what I'm doing in a film and be educated through entertainment than if I show up at a rally. I'm working on putting the causes I think we need to address into my work and into the projects I choose. All right, settle down, Amelia. There's like, I guess there's a little bit of environmentalism message to this movie. It gets totally lost in the sort of zaniness of the plot.
And look, I don't remember the exact scenes, but there's two, three, maybe four times in the movie where they throw it in your face. Yeah, but I don't like people that destroy the environment. Like, it's a line that's so straightforward they say it, about how they want
like,
it to be.
I don't think anyone's getting the environmental crusade.
No, stupid. No chance. No so chance dumb. At all. Not even close. I agree.
Do you have other research?
I did. The Japanese Garbage Collectors Union in Japan banned this movie being on the shelves.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one.
For a rental. I was like, what?
Because it portrayed garbage collectors.
It betrayed them in a bad light, which I thought was interesting. Original screenplay was entitled Clear Intent. And then I also had the Stuart Copeland did the score. And I mentioned this earlier, but the top track on the soundtrack is a UB40 song. I forget what it's called. But I listened to it. Like, I listened to the whole thing. I looked it up on Spotify or YouTube or something. UB40, in their 45 years of existence, has a bunch of hits. This ain't one of them. It's not a hit. It's not good. I don't know why this one was selected. Maybe it was cheaper. I don't know if that's a thing. But yeah, it's just, it's really bad. And I don't know why I can't see the name of it now.
Yeah, the film's title was changed to Pop 65, then to Minute Work. So we had...
Very odd.
Did you say Clear Intent?
Clear Intent, yep.
Okay, Clear Intent, Pop 65, and Minute Work. Minute Work actually aligns with the movie somewhat. The other two,
I agree.
Don't understand at all. Maybe those are in the 14 earlier drafts. There's a much clearer connection to those titles.
Who the hell knows? Who the hell knows? But anyway. All right. So that's half-assed internet research. Apex Mountain. This one could be debated. Maybe, maybe not. Do you have anyone? All right. Charlie Sheen. No. We already talked. Let's just go through who it isn't.
Okay.
Charlie Sheen, definitely. Two and a Half Men era was his Apex Mountain. And the Tiger Blood and all that shit.
Emilio. No.
Emilio. Maybe not too far from this. A lot of people would
say
Breakfast
era,
Club.
But not this movie. This wasn't like his greatest.
Young Guns, Young Guns 2, Generation Z, Millennials might say the Mighty Ducks franchise. They're wrong, of course, but whatever. Okay.
I think that would be Millennials is too old for Gen Z.
Sure. Okay, fair. Keith David? Apex Mountain?
I don't think so.
I know he's an incredible voice actor because he has a very deep voice naturally. He was the voice of Spawn, which was an animated show on HBO. And I think Spawn's part of the Marvel universe. I don't know. I'm not into comic books, but
He's in some other movie though that I feel like
he was in, like Platoon as well.
Similar vibe to this.
Oh, similar vibe to this. Well, that would not be Platoon. Not at all. Let's look at the Keith David IMDb. Again, a very 384 credits.
Yeah,
so this could take
jump
some
back
time.
In time some.
You definitely gotta do some
I
research.
I would get the one episode TV shit out of here. That's not helpful.
I know. It is kind of annoying. Let's see.
I don't know. He's been in other movies. Like,
he's been in a bunch of stuff.
I know his face and stuff, and it's not from this movie. I mean, he's obviously in this movie, but.
But again, he has done a lot of voice work because he's just one of those guys that has that voice. And if you watch this movie, you'll understand that. Yeah, I'm looking through now to see if anything pops out to me as to what you might be thinking. Quick and the Dead, Reality Bites.
Yeah, I was trying to see something too here. Let me look.
Men at Work.
Wasn't Reality
Roadhouse.
Bites. There's some movie.
I feel like if he was in Platoon, as I mentioned. I feel like if I get too far back, it makes it less likely. And he actually started his first credits in 1979. He only did a few things in the 80s. So this may have been the big break he was looking for. Kind of springboard his career. into what it became. Quick and the Dead.
I don't know what I'm thinking of.
Dead Prez.
He's definitely a possibility.
I mean, again, when you work this long, it's hard to figure out where your apex is. Unless you just have like an Oscar-winning performance or something, which I'm almost positive
he's in Trainspotter too. I don't know how big a role he had.
That's probably not it. So we'll put that as a maybe. I think it might be for him. It is for me for him, but that's not really fair because he has 384 credits. I've probably seen three of them, maybe four. So it's a small hurdle. He was in Crash. Is that what you're thinking of?
I mean, I don't really. I have seen that movie, but I don't remember what happened.
Don't remember him.
It was overhyped. It was basically like racism is bad, is my memory of what Crash was about.
Yeah, I don't really remember.
It's very preachy from what I remember. But, I mean, kinda it like might be good. I don't know. I don't remember it being good, but.
Probably not.
He's credited in anyway. Nope. I haven't seen that, but I don't know if he has a big role in that or not.
I don't believe that he does. Anyway, Apex Mountain for Leslie Hope, who we mentioned earlier was on 24.
I think 24 is probably bigger.
Okay.
Oh, maybe it's Something the last About one. Mary. I don't remember what his part was in Something About Mary.
What's the character's name? I skipped past that. Is he the father? Doesn't she have like a black father? Am I making that up?
He is Mary's dad, yes.
Yeah. That might be his apex. That was a gigantic movie. I haven't seen it.
That was a huge movie.
25 years either, but I worked at the movie theater when it came out, so I saw it plenty of times when it was in the theater.
Sorry, I hit the mic.
You certainly did.
Professional here.
All right. Last question on Apex, potential Apex Mountain. John Getz, who played Maxwell Potter.
No, I don't think so. I picked Jack Berger, Daryl Larson, the dead guy. Because I don't know anything else that he's been in. I looked at his credits and it didn't help. It's funny because he sort of looks like, I forgot his name. He sort of looks like somebody else.
Okay.
It's a classic answer. I'm trying to think of what what the actor's name was. Like, I have to look at his face again.
Nick Nolte?
No. Let's see, what's the...
He does have a face that could be somebody else. I guess I understand what you're saying.
What's his name? What's the character's name? Jack Berger.
His character's name in the movie? Yeah. Jack Berger.
I'm trying to find the person that played him. I'm trying to find his headshot. I just said his name, sorry. Daryl Larson.
Yeah, Daryl Larson. Or Jarrell? Daryl? Probably Daryl. Anyway, well, Todd's on an aimless cat and mouse chase over here. I put probably no one, but maybe Keith David. Although you're right, now that you say he was in Something About Mary, that's got to be his apex. But again, with 384 credits, my God, you'd have multiple apexes. I don't know. Okay, I'll let you keep looking that up because it's going to take you fucking 45 minutes to figure out what the fuck you're
doing. It's not going
to
help. I was just trying to see his face because he reminded me of somebody, but it's not an actor who I know that well, so I need to see his face to help jog my memory. But I can't get a good shot of him, his face, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Probably not going to find any stills from this flick of him either.
Yeah, there's he's one essentially of him wearing irrelevant a cowboy hat with his mouth open.
Right.
It's not helpful.
Post-mortem, for those of you that don't understand what that scene's about. Okay, picking nits. I'll go first.
There's a million you could pick.
There's a lot, but let's just focus on the three or four that I have and probably the three or four that you do. How did Charlie Sheen pull this dame in like 2 hours? He shows up as a creep in her building in front of her door.
Charming man with a sexy mullet and a cable knit sweater.
And in the same evening, she gets him a drink. She lets him read the bumps in her head. And then they go out and they're making out. And of course, ultimately saves her life, but that's all down the road.
Yeah.
Before that happens, they've already had a makeout session. Also, I lived in LA. I know this isn't LA, but it's south of LA. How did he even get in her building? She probably lives in a well-secured building. Like, did he slip through the back door? No pun intended. Did someone let him in? I don't like it.
Who cares?
second picking nit. I feel like if you're a bike cop, you're a bike cop. You don't bike cop by day and then you're in a cruiser at night. That didn't make sense to me at all. The same two guys. I mean, come on. And then
clearly they didn't want to have other cops.
I know. They're paying scale.
The humor is in running into the same cops multiple times.
Of course. And it does allow for the best scene in the movie, as we discussed, so I'm okay with it, but I'll let it slide. And then my biggest picking nit, the setup for the in the lockers at the garbage place with the exploding shit bag feels like just a bridge too far for these two trashmen to do multiple times and have it work multiple times against their kind of
I had
foils.
That in the unanswerable questions. Why so many shit like shit explosions? What do we do?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like
I
get don't know. You
and where's
get back
the shit
other,
coming from?
This you're just collecting liquid shit and putting it in an airbag and somehow rigging that to explode.
Those are my picking nits. And you're right. I could have come up with a dozen more, but what do you have?
Let's see. I've had this in picking nits, but it's not really one. Emilio Estevez looked really old to me.
That's not a picking nit. It's just a comment.
When Charlie Sheen is being a peeping Tom, the, what's her name? Hope or whatever?
Leslie Hope is her real name.
Yep. Takes a mango and twists it to get the pit out. You can't do that with a mango. They don't work that way.
See, in that scene, he says, oh, papaya. And he's like, no, it's mango. I think it is a papaya.
Well, papayas don't have a big pit. They have little seeds inside of it.
But I thought you can't twist them. You're right.
You do that more with like a peach, I guess.
By the way, her character's name is Susan. We should refer to her by her character's name.
Susan. Yes.
But go ahead. Yeah. Okay. That's a good
my
one.
My biggest nit is like, why are only the workers wearing hazmat suits? Everyone else is just out there like the both the heroes and the villains are just walking around. These guys have full fucking hazmat
suits. Yeah.
And they're just running around with like button up shirts. Gus is wearing a three piece suit or something. Also slides
down. I know they were calling
the
him Gus, but yes. Yeah. He slides down the thing into a giant pool.
Maxwell
of...
Potterdam the Third is wearing a suit.
Thank you.
And his henchmen also wearing suits. Like they're in the same place. Also disposing of hazardous waste just means dumping barrels down the hill. You don't even like cover it up.
Well, and that was something that was that I saw on the internet. It's like in the goofs or trivia section on IMDb, it's like you know that they're empty because they hit the water and they just float. They just roll. Like if they had toxic waste, they would sink, but none of them sink. They just hit and they stay on top of the water. But yeah, I mean, I think to actually answer your question, which I know it was rhetorical about that picking that nit, is that they don't expect to be handling the toxic waste. That's why they don't think they need to be wearing a hazmat suit. It's not I'm in proximity of toxic waste. It's I'm touching the barrels. I'm rolling the barrels down the hill.
If they were transporting it onto another boat and taking it away, I'd say, okay, they're handling the barrels, but they're just rolling it down the hill.
Like, sure.
The disposal of the waste is not the most careful thing. So
it's terrible.
If you're in the area, I'm not sure you'd want to be unmasked if these other guys are wearing
I mean, I wouldn't want to be. You're right, but
I mean, clearly they didn't want to pay those guys as much. They just have they don't have any. They're basically what's the
Disney
word?
Disney characters,
stand-ins, NPCs.
Characters. For sure. They're getting the daily minimum from SAG.
Yeah. Because you can't even see their faces. Anyway, so I thought that was...
Okay, fair. All right, Todd, could this be a Netflix show remake or any of the other things that they say on rewatchables as opposed to rewatchables? All black cast, prestige.
You definitely could remake it. You clearly have to expand the story. Like, it would have to have... there'd be a lot more... All the stuff that we said that doesn't make any sense, like Lewis just being their buddy, like you could have a whole episode where he's like giving him a hard time. Some interesting stuff happens or what funny stuff and they start to turn, that relationship forms. Like you could have more backstory on the two rival trash truck drivers.
100%. They left so much on the table with that relationship. So I said, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I think it could be, yes. Would it? I'm not sure it needs to be, but it definitely could be.
I think I said it could definitely be a sitcom. It has a built-in love story already. There's a love connection there. It has the opportunity for more hijinks as they're out getting trash every day. For a movie that's about two trashmen, there's like 2 minutes of real time where they're picking up trash and putting it in the trash truck, which I know that in and of itself isn't exciting, but it could be. They found a dead body. What else could they find while they're out there picking up trash? It has the two antagonistic foils, which are the other two garbage men who are they're pranking all day long. Not to mention the bike cops, who are another pair of foils and antagonistic.
We could delve more into their dreams and surf shop. Like
they could, they could try to start the shop.
Have some interest in opening. I like when they're talking about opening the surf shop, and Emilio Estevez is like, "I went to the bank," and he's like, "You just picked a bank out of a fucking phone book, you lazy ass."
Yeah,
it reminded me of you and me talking about doing podcast work, where you're like, "You didn't do anything."
It's very true. Then you have the two other garbage men, the two cops, you have the two mob guys. So there's literally three sets of people working against them, which
I mean, you could have a Netflix show almost without the Maxwell Potterdam III and his henchmen.
You really could. That could be season two. You introduce Potterdam and his goons. And that's what I put. I put this could go 2+ seasons for sure. Easy. 10 episodes each. No problem. Yeah. No problem. At the very end of season one, like will Charlie Sheen and Leslie Hope's character, Susan, like, you know, knock boots because she's introduced in episode 7. Like you play it out.
Backstory on the political angle.
You could
really tie in the environmental themes. Like maybe that politician is pro environment or anti environment.
Yeah, he doesn't die. He continues the campaign. You learn more about what she does. Of course, but not in season one. You actually have the full couple of weeks where Keith David's doing the ride along. You literally got one fucking day. And then everything happened. The movie ended. Like, what else is going on? Let's dive deeper into Keith. Let's do it with less racism in his flashbacks. Just have a flashback. You don't have to explain it. So, yeah, absolutely it could. And I think it should be. Like, you could do this modern day. You still need garbage men nowadays.
I don't know about should be.
Should be. Could be. I'm going to greenlight this project. I have no money to produce it, but
good luck.
I'll see what I can get done. Okay.
Netflix.
Unanswerable questions. I have a lot of unanswerable questions.
Why so many
more than
bombs?
I probably should. That was not one of them. But, okay. I'll go through mine, then you go. Why did Emilio, this is very early in the flick, you might not even remember this. Why did Emilio have a radio alarm on the beach? The morning, when they wake up to go to work,
to girl or whatever?
He's laying on the beach next to a girl, and it's an alarm, is like a clock radio goes off. What is it plugged into? Well, it's not a watch beeping. It's an alarm. Bullshit. I call bullshit on the whole thing. I think they didn't think that through when they were just like, yeah, because you hear this radio station. It's 5 a.m.
That's
an unanswerable
question. That's an unanswerable.
No, it isn't. Okay, answer it. Why do you have a radio alarm on the beach?
Battery powered. Because he needed to get up to go to his job.
If you're fucking abroad on the beach, you fucked abroad on the beach, and you just hope you can get up in time to go to work. Also, you don't care if you miss work because you're laying naked on a beach with a lady. Okay, question two. We already kind of touched on this. Why was their hobby shooting a sniper BB gun from their apartment window? Clearly, they've done this before.
Well, no, like, how is that a safe thing? It was only Charlie Sheen because Emilio did not know about it prior to that escapade.
Why did Charlie Sheen do this? It's very dangerous. Is it fun?
Yeah. I don't
Has
know.
Has he killed people before or thought he killed people before?
I don't think so. He did seem to imply that he'd done it before.
It's a hell of a shot. I mean, he hit the guy from 80 yards, I don't know, across the street with a pellet gun. It's not a rifle.
Through a closed window? They didn't really just like, no, there's no glass
it was
in any of the windows.
Giant screen door had, that was kind of my follow-up to that is, does no one have closed windows and doors? I know it's California, but Jesus.
No air conditioning. I'll just have their doors open all the time and their lights on, prancing around their apartments to look at each other.
Okay, I got three more. How was Potterdam and his goons just at the scene of the traffic collision immediately? So Charlie Sheen's character gets in the cop car, along with Susan, and they see the goons who are now like kind of in a disabled car sideways, and he floors it and rams into the car. Yeah. And then as soon as he comes to, presumably moments later, it's a guy with a gun to his head. One of the two guys in the car, by the way,
yeah,
just hops out and puts a gun to his head.
I think he was on the other side.
Sure.
But then they fishboned him.
So he rolled out. Yeah, they T-boned him.
T-boned, that's what I meant.
So then... Todd's got music on the brain. So well, then...
Fishbone apparently is like some of their original members are leaving, and I saw a post about it today. So
oh, there we go. Okay. And so then Potterdam is just there, like in his stretch Mercedes.
I think Potterdam was coming to rendezvous with his henchmen. That's why he happened to be there. That would be the explanation I would give.
All right, fine. Somewhat
it's
answerable.
Not a great one, but...
And then
you can suspend that disbelief.
The last question, which
you called
we've
him
done
on that giant cell phone.
Yeah, I knew I mentioned that earlier, but he clearly didn't have that available and out. But the last one, which we can do with a lot of these movies, particularly this one, where again the whole fucking movie took place in 36 hours. What happened the next day? Are they tried for transporting a dead body all over town? Like what happens to the relationship between Carl and Susan? What happens with
that's every like
the cops?
Disaster movie, that thriller, if you will. Like, what do they do the next day?
That's
who's
fine.
Cleaning
but
up,
there are,
who's cleaning up the Nagatomi Tower or whatever?
Yeah, Nakatomi Plaza. Like, but like the Maxwell Potterdam, is he arrested? Is he found out? Does he have like toxic poisoning and he dies?
He's been dancing in toxic waste.
Like, there's 19 open-ended stories and they don't wrap up any of them. Which, by the way, is why I think this could be a Netflix show remake or Netflix show, because they could tie all of that shit up.
Deep into all the stupid questions.
And a nice, neat bow. Okay, that was my last question. Go ahead.
I only had two. One was, why so many shit bombs? Like, why is that there? Like, again, the engineering, not likely. And why is that the material of choice? How are you harvesting this?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a great question.
Question two, what's the girl's name?
Susan.
Ginger? Susan.
Idiot.
How does she have such a nice car? She has like a cherry.
I was going to fucking write that one down.
Corvette.
Yeah, and she's like a campaign manager. Like, what do you make, 40 grand a year in 1990? Maybe.
Maybe she made 100.
Probably 30.
Still doesn't matter. That car is like.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Millions of dollars. Maybe. Not
and the apartment was very nice too. I actually was gonna write that, but I forgot to. So it's funny you thought that.
Also,
I had the exact same thought.
How does the car blow up? Because the floor mat catches
match.
On fire.
And also, and the guy's like, "Give me a light." Lighting a match, like you know, the flash. I mean, I know we don't have cell phones.
I know
but
we're doing that to move the plot along, but come on.
Yeah, that was pretty. And also, and also, that was kind of unnecessary. I mean, I understand they got away from the goons on the beach and they're running towards the car and it blows up, so they can't get away that quickly.
Why do they have to blow up such a nice car?
Yeah, that probably was
they
a third of the budget
like,
right there.
A kit car Corvette that they blew up or something.
They did. And apparently, I'm sure you saw this. You could see, if you pause it, you could see the explosive cord.
I just saw it. Like, I was like, huh.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I just noticed it because there's a big fiery line coming out of the back of the car.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that. But anyway, lots of unanswerables in here. They didn't do a nice job of wrapping up a lot of stuff. Okay, piece of memorabilia. I have two, probably pretty obvious. I already alluded to one of them. The pizza delivery guy's hat with like the cheese and the pepperoni
I have
on
the
top.
Pizza guy's uniform, yeah.
And then the BB gun would be the other one, or the pellet gun.
I had the Nixon mask.
Oh, Nixon mask. That's not bad. Nixon mask was good. Or the cowboy hat, if you're into that sort of thing. But BB gun was
BB
paramount.
Gun, definitely. The air rifle.
Yes.
They had two guns at some point. Did they have another air rifle? Where did that other gun come from?
When did they have two guns?
I feel like...
I don't remember them having two guns.
I think Lewis had a gun, and I think Emilio had a gun at some point. He definitely had one on the truck, but... I feel like they had two guns at some point.
I don't think so.
Maybe they just passed that gun around. Also,
he definitely passed it around.
He at one point holds out the gun and he has one like pellet.
One pellet, yeah. What are like, we going to do with this? Or a lot of good we can do with this or something. Yeah.
Down to the one pellet. I did like the pizza guy being like, you've been fucking holding me hostage with an air rifle.
That right.
That's pretty awesome.
One of his two lines, the whole thing. Okay. Speaking of lines, great transition. Best quotes. There's a lot. I have a few, including when the first appearance of Mike, the cops on bikes, and his coworker, whatever, they come up, and Charlie Sheen's character says, "What happened, Mike? They take away your vroom vrooms," which I thought was actually pretty fucking funny.
That's funny. I don't remember that line.
They have when they're in the diner. This is early on in the ride along. Man.
Several sacred tries, things in this world.
Yeah, he tries to take his fry. Several sacred things in this world that you don't ever mess with. One of them happens to be another man's fries. Now you remember that. You'll be you'll live a long, healthy life.
So before that, I have one. They're going through the trash, and Charlie Sheen goes, "Look at this smut." And he pulls out a card, like a nudie card that's been damaged.
Scratched.
So you can't see anything, and then
you can't
it
see
in
the
his
boobs.
Pocket.
Yeah. That was pretty odd. What are you going to do with that later, Chuck? Like, what the fuck?
Know.
Get a Sears catalog.
Emilio
and
Emilio takes a love, like a Dear John letter, also puts it in his pocket.
Yeah.
And it's very odd.
They have weird little memorabilia that they keep. Another Keith David line, when they find the body in the 55-gallon drum, he says, "Looks like somebody threw away a perfectly good white boy."
Yeah, I think that is the classic line from this movie.
Looks yeah, like I think it is.
Away a perfectly good white boy.
Definitely.
Charlie Sheen goes over
yeah.
to meet Sarah. What is her name?
Susan, not Susan. Ginger.
If anything funny happens, don't be too shy to scream, is what I think Lewis says to him.
Nice. One of my favorite, in fact, probably my favorite John Getz line, who of course played Maxwell Potterdam, and it's just the way it's delivered. It's not that it's funny. The words aren't funny, but he says the goons come back and tell him that they don't have the potential mayor candidate. And he goes, "What the hell do you mean? You've lost the body." He just says it really quickly, and it's really funny. To me
and the tape, I think he says too.
"What the hell do you mean? You've lost the body." Yeah. So that was funny to me. What else do we have? Oh,
have one more.
Go yeah, ahead. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
At the end of the movie, the two other garbage men, again, the Rastafarian, "I would pay a million pesos to see him try and stop this thing," after they cut the brake lines.
They cut the brake lines. That guy's such a fucking weird character. Such a weird character. I already mentioned that I think he wants to kill some more people. Okay. One of the goons. And then the bike cop, Mike, when he first, the beginning of that traffic stop scene, which we both agreed was the most rewatchable scene, he's saying something about what they did. And he was just, "That's reckless driving as far as I'm concerned." Like, he's such a fucking nudge. So, yeah. And then I didn't have this as one of my favorite lines, but Keith David breaks the fourth wall in this movie when they're at the toxic waste place and the rent-a-cops pull up. He goes, "Rent-a-cops, I hate rent-a-cops too," because he's looking straight at the camera. He's already said he hates cops. And then he mentioned
they should have somehow tied those rent-a-cops back to the two cops that were in the rest of the movie, like their brothers or cousins or something.
For sure. By the way, while I'm seeing if I missed any others, you do realize that Emilio Estevez's character in this movie is named James St. James.
Yeah, I saw that.
I feel like
if
you're creating a movie, writing a movie,
very
you can name the character whatever you want. Like, there's no boundaries. To go James St. James is, yeah, we'll say it's lazy.
If you wrote 15 drafts, you could come up with a better last name than James
exactly.
St. James.
Maybe one of your edits by, I don't know, draft 10 is change one of the main characters' names. I can't think of any others. A Million Pesos, that is a classic one. Let's see. Yeah, and then of course one of James' best lines. "Great, Carl gets to spend the evening with a woman and I'm stuck here with a lunatic and a corpse." True. And a pizza guy, which you didn't know was coming. Classic. Okay.
You only paid $8
for a large two-topping. It's not a thing anymore. Anywhere,
like
even shitty
extra
pizza.
Cheese isn't really a thing anymore. Does anyone get extra cheese on their pizza? You do?
We get extra cheese. Yeah,
of course you do. You're fucking weird.
We get it from garlic because you get up to 3 toppings for a certain price. So we get pepperoni, green peppers, and then extra cheese. And we've gotten it without extra cheese, and they actually do add extra cheese. You can tell the difference.
I know. I don't true like story. Extra cheese on my pizza, though. I don't want more cheese. I think that regular cheese is a good amount.
Mm. Well, you do you, Todd. It's a free country.
I also would never get green peppers on a pizza. I don't like green peppers.
Okay. I would never get black olives. And you chug them down like it's air. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's not. If I wanted that, if I wanted the taste of black olives, I'd just take a salt shaker and fucking throw it down my throat with a side of bitters.
It'd be better.
Ugh. Anyway. All right, Todd. The final category, the final question. Probably rhetorical. Who won the movie?
I had Keith David. I
think Keith David.
He's the winner.
Ball game. Not even close. Like I said, Charlie and Emilio do their thing. It's fine.
I
John
say,
Getz.
Of the two, I think
scenes.
Charlie was better. Like, he has more
range. Say it.
No, I don't think that. I think, I mean, Emilio wrote it, so I think he just had better lines. And
for sure.
I think he's funnier than Emilio is, definitely in this movie anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misheard you. You said Charlie did a better job. Okay.
Yeah. Do you not think so?
Well, I mean, the whole interaction at the girl's apartment. Again, I'm not rolling on the floor, but it was a funny scene.
He has a bigger part too, I think.
He does have a bigger part. And I bet you Emilio did that intentionally.
Yeah.
You know.
Give my bro.
Although I will say, in the only true action sequence in the whole film, Emilio has the more, when they're hanging onto the back of the truck and he's like swinging out to the side, Emilio has the more death-defying moves, or a stuntman does.
Yeah, I was like, I don't think he did those.
It's definitely a stuntman. There's one shot where it's far away, and I'm like, yeah, that guy weighs 50 pounds more than Emilio has. He's like 6 feet tall, 195 pounds. And they go back to Emilio at 5'7", $1.55. I'm like, no one's buying that. Yeah, no, I think they both did well. I think Leslie Hope did really well, too, as kind of love interest.
Yeah, she was good. Susan.
Her name thank you. Time. Shocking. 14th time's a charm. So she did a good job. And, of course, John Getz, as I was starting to mention before I got interrupted, steals every scene he's in. Just,
yeah.
He's the like man. That. Unintentionally, we did this one in the other movie where he was a very big role. I feel like I just want to go to his IMDb
are those
for the next rewatchables.
Only two major roles.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I need to figure out what other flicks we can watch of John Getz.
Yeah, we'll just do the John.
Just
Getz
do an entire
trilogy.
Year. The John trilogy. Fuck you. The John Getz filmography in its entirety. Let's start from whatever his first...
this may be it. I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of TV credits here, but Killer Bees is his first movie, although he's only an attendant, so probably not the best choice. Let's see what else in this particular time frame. Curly Sue, Pass, Crossroads, Phenom, Fortunes of War. There could be some movies in here. Not many that I've seen. I will acknowledge
that. You want
that.
To see.
Or that I want to see. Mr. and Mrs. Smith, no. So maybe not. Nah, the idea lasted for 12 seconds. It's longer than I thought it would last. So we gave it a shot. But anyway, yeah, he's still a working actor. Most of these guys are from this flick. Anyway.
Just do like bad TV movies?
No, he's in some legit TV shows and regular movies. He knows what's happening. We could do Keith David's entire filmography. That would take 3 years. We'd have turned this entire podcast into just We Watchables, and it would just be Keith David movies. That would take a long time.
Yeah, we don't need to do that either.
Yeah, we're not going to. Don't worry about it. I was just kidding. All right. So that's been at work. Any closing comments or thoughts on the flick? So you don't think you've seen it more than you count on one hand how many times you've seen it, is what you're saying.
For sure.
That's surprising.
I've at most seen it two times before today.
Okay.
I think maybe once.
Gotcha. All right. So what do you think is, what do you think's next? Weekend at Bernie's? What are your thoughts?
Emilio? No. I really don't think that movie's going to hold up. I'm just going to be disappointed if I watch it.
It definitely doesn't. I watched it probably 2 or 3 years ago. And there's a lot of, yeah, it doesn't hold up. I'll just keep it at that.
It's interesting. Movies like this, like, I mean, do they even make this kind of movie for Netflix anymore? Like, do these exist anywhere?
I don't think
they're so. Thriller comedies.
Thrillers. And again, I had that same thought when I was watching it, is, yeah, this isn't made anymore. It was made a lot at this time, but
yeah,
I don't think anyone makes these anymore. I mean, the only thing that you want to release theatrically are the giant movies.
Yeah, I know that. Comic I book just movies, meant, like, that sort to of go shit. Straight to streaming. I'm sure they have something similar. I mean, to me, this would be like the modern day equivalent would be more a TV show like Silicon Valley or something, where like
sure,
and there, and I don't mean that because of like level of humor, because I really like Silicon. I mean, I like this movie too. Whatever.
Yeah,
where it's like funny, but there's always like a slight conflict that they usually get over, but then there's something else at the end of the show that hooks you onto the next one. Like that sort of feel like, I don't know. It's kind of the same level of like easy to watch kind of thing, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. So I don't know.
I think they exist as like, again, I'm maybe giving this movie a little too much credit as like sort of some
you
of
are.
The prestige-y comedy.
HBO
sort of like
show.
HBO comedies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't like, or maybe they're just like TV, like regular linear sitcoms that I don't watch on like ABC or CBS.
That's possible. But this wouldn't work as
it's
a
not,
standard
yeah,
sitcom,
a sitcom
three-camera
though.
Shoot.
It's not that kind of like jokey.
No, it's got to be out and about too. Single cam. Watching them pick up trash.
That's why I mentioned those other shows, because they have like longer story arcs that last across
right.
a season.
No, I know what you mean.
They're not as deep as, like, those shows have more room to build on the characters that we said if this were a
and they have more characters.
Show.
This is two characters. It's a little tougher.
Yeah,
I mean, they're side characters, but we already discussed how this could work as a Netflix show. I think that's a given. We can get 20 episodes easy.
I just mean like, I don't, this type of movie, the 90, I feel like comedies, whatever, in the early 2000s got a lot raunchier or whatever.
100%. Old school.
Sort of tie back into some of those 80s, but I don't know. There's not a lot of kind of like mild comedies slash whatever.
Well, but again, we keep mocking how it's called a thriller. This is not a straight comedy. It does have funny elements, but there is this like caper part
of
it too.
Yeah, there's a larger story. It's not just
and the undercurrent of Save the Environment, which again is not in your face, thankfully, but
very under.
So that's why I say it doesn't exist anymore. Because you think about the movies, like you said, the R-rated comedies the past 10, 15 years, The Hangover, stuff like that. Like that's just straight comedy. It's made for jokes. Yes, there's a theme, but every movie has to have a theme, has to have a beginning and an end and a middle, but it's pure comedy. There should
Wait,
be
has to have a, middle
a laugh thing? Every yes, there should be a laugh every 40 seconds. There should be a conflict and a resolution, all that sort of stuff. Again, this movie has a conflict. We don't know if it resolves itself because there's so many fucking loose ends
who
by
cares?
The time it's all said and done. But who cares? That's the thing. And in the case of a movie like The Hangover, not that I'm trying to harp on that, but then there's Hangover 2. Then there's Hangover 3. And that's what a lot of these comedies now are built to do, is leave it open in case it does well so that you can have the sequel. And by the way, I'm looking at IMDb, so it was Wikipedia that said thriller. IMDb, the categories are action, really? Action, comedy, and crime.
Crime.
Great description.
I mean, yeah, sure.
There's crime. There's a murder. There's, you know, throwing the toxic
crimes
waste.
Crimes do happen, for sure.
Crimes take place. Crimes to the cops, actually happened on multiple occasions in this flick. So anyway, yeah, it's there's a bygone era
going on.
And that's why we like doing these movies, to relive this era of film. So we'll see what's next and when is next. Not really sure. Don't know. But in the meantime, next week, or at least next time you hear this podcast, presumably next week, is our 250th episode. Very excited about that. And then probably the week after, we're going to have a special guest. We almost never have guests on this podcast. We should do it more often. So I got to work out the technical specs and make sure we can do the scheduling. But the plan is to have a guest who I was speaking with yesterday and earlier today to talk basketball primarily, but also whatever else he wants to talk about. So we've narrowed it down to the gender, but that's all I will reveal at this point in time. Also because I haven't solidified the
gender reveal,
the date and time. No, not a gender reveal. So anyway, so lots coming up here in the next couple weeks. We're excited about it. We thank you for listening to this We Watchables episode. And I really enjoy these. It does, I'm sure it's brutal for you because you actually have to do some sort of prep for the show. But it is really fun.
Prep. I had a lot of other stuff going on this week, so that was a little challenging. That's fine. To get it done.
Yep, so did I. I had to watch it the first time through during my lunch break. But that's the other thing, by the way. This movie is, it says it's 98 minutes. It felt like it was 65 minutes. It felt very short to me. Like I just kind of zipped through it. But in any event. So yeah, I don't know what the next We Watchable is going to do, but I do enjoy doing these because it's fun to watch these movies. You got to take a couple notes, but that's quite all right. It's fun to talk through them and relive the glory that was this week's case anyway, Men at Work, 1990 flick. So, yeah, shoot us an email if you have an idea of a We Watchables that you'd like to hear. TheBroPodNetwork@gmail.com, TheBroPodNetwork@gmail.com. Check out our website, BroPodNetwork.com.
You can watch a better movie, too. It doesn't have to be one of these, like...
That's true. I mean, technically, the first one we ever did was an Indiana Jones flick, which was obviously a much better flick. It was terrible.
The structure is better, for sure.
The structure now is 100 times better than that first one. That was not good. We should have discussed that more before we did that one. But in any event... So yeah, thebropodnetwork@gmail.com, thebropodnetwork@gmail.com. You can shoot us an email, let us know a flick that you'd like to see us do. Bropodnetwork.com is the website. Hit us up on X and Instagram @the_bro_pod. And yeah, like, subscribe, tell a friend, bell for notifications, blobbity blobbity blah, all that shit. You know how to do it. So next week's 250th, week after is a special guest. Lots in store, folks. Busy spring. Busy, busy. Busy, as the man from Frosty the Snowman says. So, we thank you.
That's where that's from.
The magician. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, very, very timely reference for a 65-year-old cartoon that only is shown in December, and here we are in late April. In any event, we thank you as always for listening, everybody. Until next week, everybody.